Who's it gonna be, dude? Because you know where I'm gonna go with this. I discussed
it. You're going to France.
I am. We are going right back there, my friend.
It's time to fade the chalk.
Fade the chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm ASD Bro, and with me, as always, my co-host Adam Pfeiffer. We are going to dive in, continuing this division preview series with the AFC South. Adam, are you ready for all this?
Yeah, it's getting to that point on Twitter where we're in the players in shorts and helmets stage. We got OTAs starting, so that's pretty exciting. Saw Joe Burrow back, so approaching the end of May, but we have stuff. Like, it's crazy, like, how fast it actually does. Like at the same time, it takes forever to get here, but then at the same time, it also kind of flies by. It's weird how that works.
It's crazy, man, and yeah, I love it right now. This is one of my favorite times of the year, because redraft market's starting to slowly wake up from its off-season slumber. We still got best balls rolling. It's a good time of year, man, and now you're talking about we got training camp videos. Like, I know that people love to sit here and hate on them, and people are like, well, that's a really nice route he ran against air. But, dude, they're fun. Like, we can just have fun. Like, we can just enjoy good players doing good things.
That's allowed and encouraged to have fun.
Yeah, like, fun. Like, why not, man? Let's show some love to some players that we're excited to watch play this year, man. So, speaking of that, we're going to sit here and hop into the AFC South, dude. There's a bunch of players and some not-so-great depth charts to talk about here, man. Let's kick this off. Jacksonville Jaguars. First thing I want to ask you, dude, Trevor Lawrence, top man in the NFL draft, now landing in Jacksonville. What are your thoughts on this passing game overall? Because I know you love Marv. And what do you think is his ceiling, his upside for us in fantasy this year?
Yeah, so obviously this is going to be a massive upgrade going from Gardner Minshew to Trevor Lawrence. Lawrence, you know, heavily regarded as one of the best quarterback prospects we've seen in a long time, maybe since, you know, Andrew Luck. But it makes all three of these pass catchers really interesting. I mean, we've talked so much about DJ Chark and how he had just, you know, an incredibly unfortunate season in terms of, especially in the deep passing. Like, when he gets catchable targets, he's one of the better deep receivers in the NFL. The problem is that didn't happen last year with Gardner Minshew under center, who was one of the most inaccurate quarterbacks in the NFL last season. Chark's deep targets and deep, like, he caught five contested deep balls last year. It was the third most in the league, so, like, he still made plays. The problem was a lot of them at the same time were also, you know, airmailed 5 yards out of bounds or what have you. So it was weird, but that's going to be a lot better with Trevor Lawrence, who was a really good deep passer in college, can kind of just play all areas of the field. So I'm really interested in DJ Chark as well. Like, obviously we'll talk about all the receivers, but in terms of the offense, I mean, we've seen it with Urban Meyer. Like, he wants to have, you know, explosive players on the field. And while Jacksonville was pretty run heavy last year when they could be, that we talked about this one after the draft, like, especially with a new regime, and we talked about how James Robinson, like, didn't have any backup running backs, so they kind of had to give him the ball. Their passing offense was bad. This new regime, I think, is going to be more pass-heavy in general, regardless of game script, especially when you bring in Trevor Lawrence, who's now the future of your franchise. That's going to change. So I think Lawrence definitely has some appeal as, like, a, you know, ceiling top 15 type of quarterback, especially if this Jacksonville defense said, yes, they've added pieces the last couple years, but they're still missing players that they're not getting back, obviously, from when they were an elite defense a couple years ago. They should still be, like, a bottom-tier defense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much in on Trevor Lawrence, man. I think that he'll go in drafts at least late enough to where I can consider him. And right now, I mean, I think it's fine to consider him like a mid-QB2. I do think that considering some of the offseason moves that we still haven't seen yet, like if Julio Jones gets out of Atlanta, which all of that talk is permeating all of the headlines right now. But if he heads out of Atlanta, some of these quarterbacks, or Joe Burrow doesn't start the season, like, you know, under center week one, quarterbacks, I think so too, but right now it's still early. And really, like, the range of outcomes, man, like, I could see Trevor Lawrence ending up as a top 12 quarterback for me as far as rankings. I think that he could continue the trend and make it three seasons in a row of a rookie quarterback, because you saw Herbert do it last year, Kyler Murray did it the year before, being a top 12 quarterback at fantasy points per game. I do think it's possible for that to happen, because Lawrence is not only going to offer us everything with his arm and stuff of that nature, we know all of that, and this offense is going to be really well scripted around him. Because you talked about Meyer, Darrell Bevell's in town, baby. Like, we're going to get some deep shots. You got good receivers on the outside to do that with. We're going to get play action here, and Trevor Lawrence showed us in the last two seasons at Clemson that play action is in his wheelhouse. So if that's going to be dialed into this offense, it's going to be good things for Trevor Lawrence, and we have some rushing equity here, man. I don't think it's crazy that he could get, you know, 400 yards rushing on the ground, and depending on how many touchdowns he throws for and he gets on the ground, he could be a top 12 quarterback this year, and I don't think that's insane, man. But again,
I mean, we've seen Gardner Minshew post a ton of QB1 numbers, and I would say Lawrence, we know he's better as a passer in every single way, but just as a runner, because we know that was a lot of what Minshew was doing, I'd say Trevor Lawrence is just as good of a runner as Gardner Minshew. So,
oh Lord, he's better. He's way better.
And Minshew did a lot of his work off scrambles. It wasn't like a ton of design runs. But again, new regime, maybe that changes with Urban Meyer. I don't think they're going to be, you know, crazy RPO type of offense. But and just in terms of the quality of targets, I mean, Gardner Minshew last season, 67% of his passes were deemed on target, according to Sports Info Solutions. I mean, that is literally like the bottom basement of the NFL. Like some players that were better. Limited sample, but guys like Mariota, Nick Foles, Brandon Allen when he was playing for the Bengals after Burrow went down, Andy Dalton, Nick Mullins, Chase Daniel, like it's just it was brutal. And especially like you said with Darrell Bevell, I think he's going to see, and we've talked about this as well, the combination of Chark and Marvin Jones on the outside, and say, okay, I had something very similar to that in Detroit with Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay. And now I have the quarterback and Trevor Lawrence that's going to be able to make that work in the deep passing game. So I'm really high on DJ Chark as a bounce back candidate this season. Yes, there's more targets in this offense with Marvin Jones being added and Travis Etienne as well. We'll talk about him. But I just think there's a lot of potential for all these guys. And like Chark is going the earliest, but it's not even like he's going as a consensus like top 25 receiver or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in on Chark and Marvin Jones out of the most of anybody. And I mean, I know, like, look, you know, and again, right now, we're just leaning into this, dude. Like, this wide receiver core, and whether you want to talk about Visca and put him in the same mix, man, like, Chark and Marvin Jones are the guys that, like, I'm the most into. Like, Marvin Jones is still going late. Like, you can get him in most best ball drafts outside the top 100. In the last few that I've done, he's somewhere in the 120s, 130s. I think he's still getting forgotten about. And that's fine, man. I'll still have Marvin Jones because there is a reasonable expectation. Like, I don't think it's insane to say he could possibly lead this team in targets this year. So could DJ Chark. I like both of them. But as far as, like, at draft position, Marvin Jones is my favorite. And I know, like, we talked earlier in the offseason all about LaVisca. I love his talent. The thing that scares me about Visca is how is he going to be used? Like, we heard all the rumblings coming out from NFL Draft. Like, they were thinking about going with Kadarius Toney. Is Etienne going to be used in the slot? Are they going to move all these guys around? I think the roles that we can pretty much, at least at this point right now, kind of pigeonhole, okay, I know what they're going to do in this offense. That's Marvin Jones and DJ Chark. Etienne and Visca, I still think it's a little bit of unknowns, man. Like, we don't know what they're exactly going to do with those two different players and how they're going to deploy them. And if we are going to buy in, look, this regime didn't draft LaVisca Chenault. Urban Meyer did not draft him, man. So some of these inherited players by new coaching staffs, if some of these roles and how we're projecting them for this NFL season, I love Visca's talent, and I want him to play out of the slot. Do I know that he's going to be a full-time player in this offense and we're not going to see ETN, you know, used out of the slot or them run some 21 personnel and motion ETN into the slot and Visca's sitting on the sidelines and he's more of like a 50% snap player? Then that's going to take me off him, man, because it's not like he's like uber, uber cheap in drafts right now. Like, there's still enough people out there that believe in him, and I get that. Like, I do too, but I don't know if the usage is going to be there. But do you see this offense any difference, Adam?
Yeah, I think right now on, what is it, May 25th, we can definitively say that Marvin Jones, DJ Chark, clear-cut starting outside receivers in the team. And we like that, especially in this Darrell Bevell offense, especially with Trevor Lawrence under center. The Travis Etienne thing is interesting because his role is most likely going to fluctuate throughout the year, right? Like, I think he's going to start the season as, like, the third down back, and they'll mix him in. And James Robinson will get, you know, the early down work. But again, this is a different regime that didn't draft James Robinson. They clearly they didn't have to draft a running back at 25 overall where they did. So, like, if ETN's ripping off a bunch of plays and making plays, he's going to be on the field more, and that's going to make him potentially out of the backfield more. And if that's the case, then I think it's better for Laviska Shenault. Like, yes, ETN's going to be a better receiving threat regardless of if he's in the backfield or in the slot than James Robinson will ever be, which could hurt Laviska, but it hurts him more if he's lined up, you know, playing the receiver, because, you know, you're not going to run four wide receiver sets all the time and stuff like that. So in terms of snaps, it could hurt. But yeah, Laviska, it's also interesting because you have the Curtis Samuel dynamic we talked about, how, like, we could see theoretically Urban Meyer use him in that role, and that's exciting, especially when he's in the slot and how good he is in terms of breaking tackles and missed tackles forced. But I would agree with you that with the Travis Etienne, not only selection in the draft, but now the news about and the buzz about him playing wide receiver a little bit, that takes him from, you know, maybe second. Chark has always been my favorite. Just because of the upside that takes him, you know, comfortably for me behind Marvin Jones. But, like, we talk about best ball stacks. I mean, this is a very inexpensive stack that you can get all three guys potentially.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of where I sit with it. Cause, like, I mean, put it this way, dude. So looking at this backfield, Travis Etienne is currently going right now. He is at 46.3 in terms of ADP. Considering what we're looking at as far as this backfield, James Robinson's still there, dude. He's still there. And we got some murkiness about, like, his usage. Yes, maybe pass game role. How much of the rushing? How much of the goal line? How much of all these different things that really, like, put you over the top in fantasy? I mean, come on, man. Are you willing to sit here and pay that price? Are you willing to sit here and draft Travis Etienne in the fourth round? Maybe he falls to the fifth, but the closer we get to the NFL season, running back thirst is real, dude. He's going to be a fourth-round pick. I won't be surprised if he gets into the back end of the third, the closer we get, and we get more training camp videos out there. Are you willing to push the button on ETN in the late third round? Hell, even I'll just tell you the fourth round. Is he going to be a fourth-round pick for you?
Probably not, but I think he will, and, like, I get it. Like, it's warranted because, like you said, running backs are going to be scarce after you get to that drop-off point. And ETN, if you're looking, like, in PPR leagues, sure, fourth round. I personally probably won't go there myself, but I get it, and it makes perfect sense. But, like, you talk about running backs around him in that range, like, is he going to creep up to the Clyde Edwards-Helaire tier? Because if that's the case, then, like, I won't have any Travis Etienne.
I think it's possible, too. Like, I really do. Like, I think, like, there is still enough of a crowd out there that's enamored with Etienne and all of his pass game usage, his upside. He goes in the first round and stuff. And I'm just like, look, man, I'm not paying a fourth-round price on him. I'm not going to do it. So, like, I think there's too many good wide receivers.
Yeah, I have him as my RB25 right now. Mm-hmm. So he's in that, like, Kareem Hunt, Chase Edmonds role or range. I think if you're there and, like, you need a running back, like, he obviously presents more upside than any of those guys, right? Like, yeah, I mean, Kareem Hunt, theoretically, if something happens to Nick Chubb, but Kareem Hunt played a couple games without Nick Chubb last year and wasn't as good as we thought he would be. So, especially because I think Javonte Williams, who we'll talk about again on the AFC West podcast, like, he's going to go multiple rounds later, and, like, who has more touches at the end of the season? You know, like...
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, man. I mean, look, you said you have him at RB 24, is that right, or 25?
25, one spot after Melvin Gordon.
And I've got him at RB 24 right now. So a few players that I have ranked around him that I think people are going to be staring at in drafts the closer we get to the season. Let's play a little of this or that, okay? Travis Etienne or Myles Gaskin?
Gaskin. By same. A decent amount. I have him at RB 20, I think.
Yep, he's RB 21 for me. Okay? Mike Davis and the thickness of those legs versus Travis Etienne.
I have Mike Davis two spots ahead. I mean, he's...
Same.
They had nine draft picks to select a running back, and they didn't. So, right now, so, I mean, Mike Davis getting 17 touches a game, and, oh, by the way, Julio Jones, which it sounds like he's getting traded, doesn't just help Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts, doesn't hurt Mike Davis either for some targets.
So, last player we're going to sit here and bring up here, and you talked about him very, very briefly, Chase Edmonds... or Travis Etienne. I'm going with Edmonds. Like, I have him ranked above him.
They're very similar in terms of their roles, right? The difference is, I think there's more of an unknown upside with Etienne, because we know for a fact that the Arizona Cardinals do not view Chase Edmonds as a every down or even close to an every down back. I'm not saying James Conner's going to come in and get 20 touches a game, but with Urban Meyer, like, pairing him with Trevor Lawrence, who's to say that at, I know James Robinson's still there, but who's to say at, like, at some point in the season, like, I think Travis Etienne has a better chance to be a 20 touch back than Chase Edmonds, just because Chase Edmonds is in the same offense, the same coaching staff and everything, and they've yet to do it other than games where they've had to. I think it was the Miami game last year where he started and kind of underwhelmed, but they are literally back to back for me. I'm leaning Etienne just because of the unknown a little bit in the upside, but the offense and everything and the fit for the offense right now definitely favors Edmonds. I think they're very interesting in terms of their roles, though, because they could be very similar roles. I think Etienne's going to get probably more carries, I would say, but, like, the receptions are going to be interesting for both players.
See, and I go Chase Edmonds for, well, one to two different factors. One, I think Kenyon Drake is a better running back than James Conner. So whether you want to talk about at this stage of their careers, what have you, I think that he is a better running back than James Conner. So if you're talking about, okay, the competition in the backfield, as well as I think Edmonds is a better receiver than James Conner. I think Edmonds can garner more of this workload than we saw last year. And Arizona's going to run way more plays than Jacksonville. So we're talking about pace. And if Conner's still involved, say 35% of the snaps, 40%. If you're running more overall plays, even if that's the case, and say Etienne garners a higher snap percentage, I'm still going to lean with the team that's going to run more plays, give me more opportunities, more chances at scoring, and what have you, man. That's why I lean Edmonds.
And, like, with the, like, the Cardinals are interesting, obviously, because of their pace every year and stuff like that. But there's also, like, I don't know if, like, I don't know if Chase Edmonds is going to be the goal line back, right? And that's obviously valuable. Kenny and Drake's touchdowns were a little bit, you know, boosted by Kyler not running after his shoulder injury. That's when he really was like, he was like the RB5 or something in fantasy until Kyler got healthy and started running again. But is Edmonds going to have that role? Because if he doesn't, that obviously hurts. But at the same time, when you're talking about, you know, pace and everything, if you're running no huddle at a massive clip, you're not going to be able to have the luxury to, or the time to, you know, sub guys in and out. And if that's the case, and Edmonds is going to get, you know, decent goal line and short yardage work, the question is, when they're, you know, not in that situation, are they just going to immediately go to James Conner inside the 5 yard line? Because we know for a fact that this team is going to play fast, and they're going to play a ton of no huddle, and they're going to average a lot of seconds. I mean, they went no huddle 40% of the time last year, like 40. Next highest was what, the Giants at 29%. You can check that out in our pay stats on FTN Fantasy. Like 40% no huddle.
It's insane, man. And that's kind of why I lean Edmonds, because the reason, like, if they're going constant no huddle, he ain't coming off the field, dude. And we know he owns the pass game role. He owned it last year. He was top 10 amongst all running backs and routes ran. He's going to own that again. So I think Edmonds is going to surprise some people with the amount he's going to play, man. So
before we get – actually, we got to talk about James Robinson too for anybody that hasn't listened. But I just – can I just make my again, 30-second case on why you should draft Marvin Jones?
Go ahead. Do it. The floor is yours, sir.
He scores 9-plus touchdowns every year he's healthy. He's in the same offense he was last year with a wrinkle of more creativity, because how often did the Lions last year run the ball on first down and make it 2nd and 9? And he's good at football. And he's, like, I'm biased. I love Marvin Jones more than any person on this planet. But if he was going every year as, like, the wide receiver 26, 27, it'd be different. I'd be like, okay, he's fine there. You can take him if you want to. But it's every year the guy's going as wide receiver 40-plus, and every year he finishes wide receiver 30-plus. And he's still outside the top 50?
It's low. You got to do a lot of scrolling on all these best ball sites to sit here and, like,
and
find
him. And I talked
him,
about
man.
It, and, like, everybody's like, yeah, but he only had – his numbers are good at the end of the year, but he has, like, 3 huge games. Okay, first of all, that's good. We like players that have huge ceilings. When is that a bad thing? Second of all, it's best ball. That's what we like. So, like – if he was going as a wide, like, where he should be going, I would be touting him every year. Like, okay, I lied. I would be, but I wouldn't be like as almost annoyed by it, because it's just every year. And, like, he has this rap that he's just a touchdown scorer, but, like, he's a downfield threat. He's with Daryl Bevel. I don't know. It's just dumb.
My whole entire takeaway from that entire rant was, if you're doing projections and you don't have Marvin Jones projected for 9 touchdowns, I absolutely question what you're
doing.
Just from the
beginning. You have to project him for 9 touchdowns, and you have to project Alvin Kamara for 81 receptions.
Absolutely. If that's not the case, then just toss the computer straight into the dumpster, man. Heading from Jacksonville, going over to the Indianapolis Colts, man. Talking about a player that, look, his last season we saw him on an NFL field was an absolute dumpster fire. Do you think there's any hope, Adam, for a Carson Wentz renaissance year in the year of our Lord in 2021? Can Carson Wentz bounce back?
I think it depends on what we determine and view as a renaissance here. He's not going to be MVP Carson Wentz, or, you know, he should have won MVP that year. What was it, 2000, the Super Bowl year? Like, he's not... I don't think he's getting back to that level. I don't know what happened, but, like, his – you can make – like, a lot of Eagles fans will either say it's either Wentz, it's the offensive line, or it's the receivers. It can be all three. Like, Wentz can play bad, and the offensive line can be bad. And because if you watched him play, yes, he didn't have the greatest pass catchers. Yes, the offensive line, they had the most combinations of offensive line starters in the NFL last year. But if you just watched his reads – They were like laughable. Like, you didn't know what he was looking at. And to me, that's more of like a something that he has to get settled and kind of figure out. But in this offense with the Colts, he's back with Frank Reich, who's been kind of known as a quarterback whisperer throughout his career, and he's obviously very familiar with him. The offensive line is going to be better. I know they don't have Anthony Costanzo at left tackle, but they still have a great offensive line. The running game is going to help, because that's going to be the focal point of the offense. I think they kind of asked Carson Wentz to do a little bit too much last year. And as long as he can just get the ball out of his hands, because when he holds on to the ball too long, which he does a lot, he is bad. And I think that can be fixed here. The question I have is, because Carson Wentz is going to be like a quarterback two guy in two quarterback leagues or whatever, like, or a streamer. So I'm not as excited about him. But what is the difference going to be between Philip Rivers and Carson Wentz? Because we know Philip Rivers targets the running backs a ton, targets the tight ends a ton. At one point last year, like, tight ends accounted for like 30% of the Colts' touchdowns. But Carson Wentz, whether it's been by design or just personnel, like, during his time with the Eagles, alongside Frank Reich, I mean, it was Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz Zach Ertz was just leading the league in receptions almost. So that'll be interesting to see where the targets go. I think he'll be better, because he really can't be worse, but he's not going to be, like, back to, like, a top 7 or 8 quarterback in the NFL, I don't think.
No, I agree with you. I think I'm best viewing him as a mid QB two. Now, where you want to slot him in there? I think that he's going to have a bounce back season and be a serviceable starter in the NFL? Yes, I think he's going to have a very, very fine season. Like right now, I have him at QB 18. He's right above Ben Roethlisberger, Baker Mayfield, Kirk Cousins, that entire tier of quarterbacks for me over at FTNFantasy.com. But like, look, if people want to sit here and mishmash and move those players around, like, I get it. But my whole thing with, like, Wentz is we've seen him put a team on his back. We've seen him play at an MVP caliber level. And, I mean, dude, look, we can go back to 2019. He willed that team with no damn receivers, with Greg Ward catching passes down the stretch, man. Like, I understand it's all cute and it's the cool thing to sit here and hate on Wentz right now, but I'm not there, dude. Like, I think that Philly was broken last year. Whether you want to talk about the offensive line, whether you want to talk about playing Alshon Jeffrey over Travis Fulgham, you want to talk about Zach Ertz and his entire talent profile just falling off a cliff. All of those things kind of all created a perfect storm for Carson Wentz to crash and burn, dude. Did he have a good year? No. Did he play bad under his, like, considering his play on the field, was it bad last year? Yes. I'm not disputing any of that. But if we go back and not too far in the past, we've seen this guy put a team on his back. We've seen this guy rise above all of those different things. And just to say, okay, we did it that year. Why didn't he do it again? Oh, you didn't do it again. Now you're terrible. Now you're trash. I'm not willing to sit here and make that bet, man. I think Wentz is going to bounce back. I think Frank Reich is going to put him in a good situation to succeed with short A-dot targets, getting the ball out of his hands, getting players into space, and create easier completions for him with a better skill set of players around him, man. So I'm in for Wentz to bounce back, although I will not rank him higher than a mid-QB2. Because like you're talking about, this offense is going to be based around the engine that is going to push this offense and propel it forward is going to be Jonathan Taylor, dude.
Yeah.
I think that he is locked in. I'm willing to take him in the middle of the first round. I know people are out there in the streets and talking about it. Go ahead and look at the Booms, Busts, Breakouts, and Bet series that me and Brad are doing. We just diced up the Colts, and I discussed why I am full in on Jonathan Taylor. The guy showed us last year. Like, down the stretch, weeks 11 on, he was the RB3 in fantasy. And people are like, well, he's not going to get enough pass game role. And I'm like, did you really, like, look at the numbers and talking about this? Or are you just talking straight out your ass? Like, he showed us last year he could be a top five running back. He did that down the stretch last year. And in that stretch, so weeks 11 through 18, his routes per dropback crept up. He was around the 42% mark. He also, in that stretch, ran more routes than Nyheim Hines. Now, Nyheim Hines still had a role, and they counteracted that in taking Hines, and they moved him, and he played more outside and in the slot last year, with Taylor grabbing more of the routes out of the backfield. Now, the interesting conundrum, and we're going to talk about these wide receivers, that now we were presented with in the 2021 season is, we're assuming Paris Campbell's going to come back, and he is going to play out of the slot. He was 95% out of the slot last year. So what does that do for Nyheim Hines? If Paris Campbell's back on the field, does that hurt Nyheim Hines most out of everybody else on this team? Or is Hines going to play outside and Campbell plays inside? It's going to be interesting, but I think if you're looking for a player that could take the most hit by a healthy Paris Campbell, Zach Pascal's showing that he can play outside a little bit, or at least when he's asked to, and what they're going to do there. Like, if Hines is not going to still have enough of the role in the slot and outside, I think Taylor's going to sit here and garner the routes out of the backfield, man. I mean, we've seen videos right now. He's already running routes out of the backfield. And yes, I know it's one freaking video, and I'm not reading that much more into it, but you marry some of these things with what we saw from week 11 on last season, I think Taylor is going to have a pass game role in this offense. I think Nyheim Hines is the one that's going to get hurt, at least if we're projecting forward, because if Paris Campbell can, and Lord, can stay healthy, Nyheim Hines is the one that's going to sit here, and he's the one that I think is going to have the biggest drop in his fantasy value. But do you see this different, Adam?
Yeah, so I think that was one of the most interesting things about Jonathan Taylor right out of the gate is, coming out of Wisconsin, there was a lot of, you know, concerns about him as a pass catcher and if he was going to be good in that role. And entering the season, a lot of fantasy analysts, including myself, were like, is this guy going to even reach like 25 receptions? And obviously Marlon Mack getting hurt, you know, changed the entire season for him, but he was fantastic as a pass catcher last year. He had like an 88% catch rate. He made plays after the catch. Then he had that little spell where he was fumbling the ball. But once he got that out of control, like, he was a rookie. He got off to a slow start, and then he was like struggling to find the holes. Like, they were there, but he was struggling to find them. And then the game slowed down for him, you know, towards the end of the season, and he was unbelievable. So I'm not worried about Marlon Mack being there. I think it's more of a familiarity thing, because I don't think any other teams are really going to bring him in coming off a torn Achilles. And the Colts love him, obviously, so it made sense from all aspects. Is he going to, for me, like, I think he's more of like a early second for me, but that's mainly because I think a lot of people, and perhaps yourself included, have him ahead of some other running backs that, like, I would much rather have Zeke, which I've talked about Zeke a lot. Like, I think a lot of people are putting him ahead of Zeke, and I would much rather have Zeke. So, like, there's players like that, like, who I would rather have in the first round, but he's probably going to be a first-round pick. So, like, if you want Jonathan Taylor and you're, you know, at the 107, like, you have to take him. He's not going to be there, obviously. Yeah. And, like, there's obviously still – we've seen the upside down the stretch last year. This offensive philosophy is not going to change. He's entering his second year, so he should be even better. The goal line work will be his. Jordan Wilkins got phased out once Jonathan Taylor kind of figured everything out. So I'm not worried about Marlon Mack. I think Jonathan Taylor is a rock solid RB1. Would I rather have, you know, guys like Zeke? I would. But that's not a knock on Jonathan Taylor to say you'd rather have Ezekiel Elliott over him.
No, it's not at all, man. And I absolutely get that. I have Zeke ranked over Jonathan Taylor right now. And Jonathan Taylor, as I'm staring at my ranks right now in FTM Fantasy, Jonathan Taylor is my RB6. Zeke is my RB4, and I got Kamara right above him at RB5.
So you like, have I'm Taylor. Really, I'm assuming you have Taylor ahead of Barkley?
No, Barkley's RB3.
So who do you have outside of your... Because you said you have him at 6, right?
Yep.
I have him at 7.
Yep. Cam Akers is right at RB7, Nick Chubb RB8, and Najee Harris is RB9. Antonio Gibson runs at the top 10 at RB10.
Okay.
The name you don't hear there is Derrick Henry, which, that's, I mean, we'll discuss coming up here. Derrick Henry, I'm kind of worried about, man. I know the volume is going to be there, and we'll get to it. We'll get to it. But with wrapping a bow on this, dude, I think Jonathan Taylor is going to be Nick Chubb with more pass game usage this year. And Nick Chubb, we've seen, like, explosive run abilities. Naheem Hines can still be involved. That's fine, man. But I think this is Taylor's backfield. I'm all in, dude. I think this guy can crush this year for this season. Discussing this pass game, though, let's get back to that. If you're going to pick one wide receiver that you're going to sit here and push your chips in on, Adam, who's it going to be, dude? Because you know where I'm going to go with this. I discussed
them. You're going to France.
I am. We are going right back there, my friend. Where are you going for your favorite Colts wide receiver?
I'm still intrigued by Michael Pittman. Yes, tell me why. T.Y. Hilton's back. But Michael Pittman, it was a little bit frustrating his rookie year because he showed a lot of signs. It was, the one Thursday night game, I want to say it was against Tennessee, where he looked like a superstar and then would disappear at times. And then the playoff game against Buffalo, like, they couldn't stop him. And I think a lot of that was because the Bills were playing like the softest zone defense I've ever seen, and I was very tilted. But I think there's still a lot of potential with him. Like, he was, I mean, at 6'4", 223, he was really, really impressive on, like, those slants and those drags. He averaged 7.3 yards after the catch per reception last year. That was third best among all receivers as a rookie. That's encouraging. I just think, like, they talked about it after they drafted him in the second round. Like, Chris Ballard and, like, they love Michael Pittman. They think he's going to be their next, you know, alpha. And second-year receivers, third-year receivers, like, that's when they really start to just come on. You know, not everybody's, you know, Justin Jefferson right out of the gate. I think Michael Pittman's got, like, a massive, massive breakout potential. And if, like, Carson Wentz returns to not being, like, the MVP-type caliber, but back to being a very good NFL quarterback, I think Michael Pittman's going to be a massive reason why. I just can't get over the fact that he's 6'4", 223, good speed, great after-the-catch ability, and he's only getting better. So, yeah, consider me still very interested in Michael Pittman.
And I get it, man. I think we're splitting hairs here because, look, Pittman and Paris Campbell are going to go late in drafts. I think they're both kind of being forgotten about. I think if there is one name that people are more likely to gravitate to, I think that it is Pittman. But like you said, I'm going back to France, my friend. I am back in on Paris Campbell. I mean, good Lord, Adam. We just need health, my friend. We need health. That's all he needs to sit here and show that he's got the freaking talent. Like, the guy's got afterburners for days. And as a 6'205 wide receiver with a 97th percentile speed and burst scores, I think he can destroy this year. Because you look, when we have seen Paris Campbell on an NFL field, the Colts have wanted to use him, man. And I know it's extremely small sample sizes, but look, this is all we've got to work with. Four NFL games with 49% or higher snap percentages played. The Colts in single game target share percentages, 20%, 17%, 16%, 13%. In three of those four games, you are seeing a guy that is going to be utilized heavily. And we're talking about Frank Reich is trying to unbreak and fix Carson Wentz. Best way to do that, easy completions over the middle of the field. And I'm sorry, man, off coverage against nickel corners, they cannot hang with Paris Campbell, dude. I think that he is the guy that I'm going to push my chips in on this year for the Colts passing attack. He's got the talent, and Lord, we just need the health, man. Like, I believe in him.
The only thing I worry about with the Colts receivers is touchdown upside. I mean, Rivers threw, what, 24 touchdowns last year, and 33% of them went to tight ends. And I think Wentz, I think that's a huge part of this offense, not just with whether the quarterback is there.
Agreed.
Mo Alley Cox is still there. Jack Doyle is still there. Burton's a free agent. But, like, that's going to be part of their offense in the red zone. And we know Jonathan Taylor is getting the rock there, too. So I don't think, like, I would be really surprised if any of these Colts wide receivers flirted with or reached double-digit touchdowns. But, again, they're going so late. They don't have to be huge touchdown scores. But yeah, like Paris Campbell, like you said, like if he stays healthy, he's right up there with some of the fastest players in the NFL. Like he's got legitimate breakaway ability.
And that's why I'm with it, man. I just think that he is going to create the easiest looks for Carson Wentz. I think that he has the breakaway speed. You're talking about if the touchdowns are going to come, they got to be long distance. I think Paris Campbell is the best person to sit here and put your bets on as far as being able to pay off on that, on breaking long plays. And I know we haven't discussed T.Y. Hilton here, man. I'm out, dude. Like, I'm just not. Like, I think if anybody's looking at his stretch run for last year, you're really chasing ghosts. You're chasing shadows.
So we have a 17-game schedule, right? Is he playing the Texans for all 17 games? Because then I'd draft him 101. I would draft him 101.
He would need it, though, dude. And you look at the last, like, part of last season. The final six games where he kind of went off and he gave people a sliver of hope walking into 2021. You're looking at five of those six defenses were 26th or worse in past DVOA. Texans twice, the Raiders, Tennessee, and Jacksonville. Blech! And that's where he scored all five of his receiving touchdowns. And this is not a guy that we can believe is going to be a red zone weapon. Like, he's a year older. He's not huge. We know the tight ends are going to garner a lot of that equity, man. No T.Y. Hilton for me, man. But you brought him up here. We're going to move over to Houston in this terrible, terrible depth chart. Adam, I mean, just straight up, man. Do we even care about this team for fantasy purposes? If Deshaun Watson is throwing the ball or not throwing the ball? And we're going to play right now more of the advocate of he's not throwing the ball. Do you care about any part of this offense?
I don't want to say no.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I can not. I don't think I can say that I care about anybody. Because, like, I am intrigued by Nico Collins. just because it made sense as a fit. You look at this Houston Texans group of pass catchers, right? It's Brandon Cooks, it's Randall Cobb, it's Andre Roberts. Like, it's a lot of smaller receivers. And then they bring in Nico Collins, who was one of the few receivers in this draft class that actually had some size to him, at 6'4", 215. He's probably going to start right away on the out in two receiver sets, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and their three wide set will be Cooks, Cobb in the slot, and probably Nico Collins. But again, if it's Tyrod or Davis Mills, like, I don't know if we care. Like, and I don't think Deshaun Watson's playing this year. I really don't.
Yeah.
Let's because we're not going to be talking about the Texans much this offseason, while we have them, let's say hypothetically, just in case, Deshaun Watson does play. Brandon Cooks is obviously interesting. He's kind of interesting regardless, just because of the targets he's going to get. He had a career-high 24% target share last year, which seems low, but like when you consider he's played with so many other great players and great offenses, you know, a 24% target share where in a season where Will Fuller played the majority of the season, he had the suspension down the stretch, but Will Fuller was a huge part of the offense. He's obviously now gone. Like, regardless of who's under center, this is going to be a bottom five team in just all aspects in the NFL this year, so they're going to be trailing. He could surpass a 24% target share and have another career high in target share this year, which is interesting, and nobody wants to draft him because it's the Texans. But, like, if Tyrod's under center for the whole year, like, Tyrod's good enough for just Brandon Cooks to be decent on that target share. Obviously, the upside is capped. But, yeah, I mean, like the backfield is a complete mess with Philip Lindsay, Mark Ingram, and David Johnson. Johnson was good in fantasy last year, but it was more so just counting stats off volume and receptions. Like, he had the one game where he had, like, 8 or 9 receptions, right? And that made up for, like, a huge percentage of his actual receptions for the year. So even that was kind of fluky. I didn't get why Philip Lindsay signed here, especially after being kind of disrespected his entire career with Denver. He's been great for them every single week, every single year, and they constantly wanted to bring in other running backs or underutilize him, and they decided not to bring him back. And then he goes and signs where they have other running backs. Like, didn't get that for him, but, yeah, I mean, like, there's not a lot to be excited about at all. And I hate doing that. I hate just saying, yep, scratch this offense completely out, because everybody has some sort of potential and some value, but this is bad, man. Yeah, it was the week three. It was the third to last week of the season. David Johnson had 11 catches on 11 targets. 11 of his 33 receptions came in that game. 11 of his 33.
Loud. Yeah, I don't want any running backs out of this team. This team is not going to put up a ton of points. I have no clue. Like, I think, like, with the parallels, obviously, to Baltimore and them bringing in all these different backs, I think it's going to be a gross, ridiculous committee. I don't think David Johnson's going to garner enough of the work here. But getting back to the pass catchers, dude, I've got interest in Brandon Cooks, and I'm really into him. I think that he's going in a spot in best balls right now, and is probably going to stay in outside the top 100. Right now, he's in the 90s overall right now, but I think that he could even drop as we get closer to the season. No Watson, people want to stay away from this offense. And you're talking about his targets here? Dude, you look at the after, like, Will Fuller left the team and he was not even on the field. Brandon Cooks saw a 28% target share. 28, which is top 12 amongst all wide receivers. He's going to get a ton of targets this year. Because, yes, the defense is bad. The other thing about it is they brought back their offensive coordinator in Tim Kelly. This is a guy that directed an offense with Deshaun Watson last year that was second in the NFL in neutral script passing rates, behind only the Steelers. They're going to throw the ball. They don't have the running backs or the offensive line to sit here and do anything else. They don't have the defense that's going to sit here and even if you want to talk about, like, they slow the pace down a little bit. They could run at least at an elite average pace and be fine with that. Because we're talking about, it's Brandon Cooks and freaking Nico Collins. Like, that's it for pass catchers. No, I don't care about Jordan Akins. In Dynasty Deep, do I care about Brevin Jordan? Sure, yes, that's fine. But in year one, no. Brandon Cooks is going to gobble up targets, man. He's got the talent to sit here and take him to the house, too, because the guy's still, when he's been on the field, man, how many different stops and how many different teams and quarterbacks do we have to see this guy roll up 1,000-yard receiving seasons? I'm in on him at cost. I'm in on him in drafts. I'm in on him for the volume. I think that he's a fine pick because you're going to be getting him, Adam, as your wide receiver 4. Hell, if you go early in drafts and you lean into wide receivers, your wide receiver maybe 5 at that spot? Yeah. Give me some Brandon Cooks, man. And Nico Collins is the last pick of a draft as a guy who, in his first year, could garner a 20% target share in this offense. Yeah, I think that's fine, too. I was lower on Nico Collins with his prospect profile than a lot of others because I think his physical acumen, he doesn't play up to that. Like, if you look at his testing numbers versus his play on the field, the two don't exactly match up. But as a guy that I think is going to be a starter from day one, I'm not worried about Kiki QT and whoever the hell else you want to talk about at this out of this depth chart taking targets away from him. Yeah, give me a lot of Brandon Cooks. And I do have interest in Nico Collins as a last pick of your draft. Because if anything happens to Brandon Cooks, Collins himself could gobble up targets on this team, dude.
Yeah, I mean, if he saw a 24% target share last year and then it went up to 28% after Will Fuller was suspended, like, I don't think anybody should be surprised, especially if somehow Watson plays, if he gets up to that 27% mark or so. Again, and with how efficient he's been in good offenses and with good quarterbacks, if Watson's there, he'll probably be a top. Like, if we knew for a fact that Deshaun Watson was playing for the Texans this year, Brandon Cooks would be a wide receiver, a top 20 receiver easily.
Yeah, dude. Like, if that's the case, if Watson was playing, you can't draft, like, he would not fall out of the top 36 wide receivers. It's just a fact. And he's going so, so late right now. That if you want exposure to him, you need to get it now in best ball, yeah, and you like, need to sit there and draft early.
There's still a non-zero chance that Deshaun Watson plays. Like, it's not set in stone he's not playing.
Yep.
It's starting to trend that way, but it's not non-zero.
I'm in on him for the volume, and then like if you want to talk about Watson playing or not playing, then there's extra upside that's not being baked into his ADP right now. All right, man, to close this out for the AFC South, let's head over to Tennessee and discuss this offense, dude. A.J. Brown is getting all the hype, all the headlines, and for damn good reason, because regardless of whatever metric you use, doesn't matter about yards per route run, doesn't matter about fantasy points per target, per route, whatever you want to dice up about A.J. Brown, he is that dude. My question about A.J. Brown, Adam, are you willing to take him as the wide receiver 5, the wide receiver 6? Because if you want him in drafts, that's where you're going to have to draft him, dude. And I'm not saying that I don't get it, because I do. I believe in the talent. I believe the target volume is going to be there. Are we drafting him at his ceiling or near it at that point? And are you willing to still press the button?
Absolutely. I have him as my wide receiver 5. So, this is a guy who in his first two seasons in the NFL, and yes, I'm apparently Chris Collinsworth now, he's been the wide receiver 12 and the wide receiver 20 in PPR scoring. In those two seasons, he's been 30th and 46th in targets. He's getting to that 130 to 150 target mark this year. Unless they bring in Julio, which they're on the list, I feel like. With how efficient he's been in terms of fantasy points per route run, yards per route run, how he's been the guy after the catch in the NFL, like if he gets to 130 targets, he is going to flirt with legitimate wide receiver 1 potential, especially if Aaron Rodgers is in Green Bay. I think there's times where there's a player in the offseason that's just hyped up and hyped and hyped, and it gets to a point where you're like, okay, let me try to find something not to like about this player entering a season. I'm not doing that with A.J. Brown. I just think he's – like, he had 106 targets last year. If he stays relatively healthy – and yes, I know it's an extra game, so like – but even in a 16 – say this was a 16-game season next year, I would say still that number goes up by like 35 or 40. And with how efficient he's been – That's huge. So if he's going to be competing for targets with no one, because he's going to be the first read, all the time. There's a lot of plays where Corey Davis was the first read last year. That's going to be A.J. Brown. Like, their offense is going to be running through two players, maybe a third who we'll talk about, and that's what we like for fantasy. I almost mentioned Tennessee in our offense as a target episode of the podcast because I just love concentrated offenses, and this is going to be one unless they bring in Julio Jones or one of these receivers. And there's still like maybe some like rumors about a Jamison Crowder trade or something. I don't know, but even if they bring in Jamison Crowder, that's not taking me off of A.J. Brown. I'm perfectly fine drafting him as the wide receiver five. He is a great second round pick. And he has, like, I legitimately think he has the chance and the potential to be the wide receiver one in fantasy.
I like A.J. Brown a ton, and
are you worried about Arthur Smith being gone?
Dude, I'm immensely worried about that. And the thing about it with A.J. Brown's target volume, I think that he has the ability to garner all of this offense, dude. Like, he can end the season with above a 30% target share, and that's fine. My worries stem and begin and end with Todd Downing. Like, and everybody tells me, okay, they kept him, or he's going to be running into similar concepts to Arthur Smith. So your hope is that he's watered-down version of Arthur Smith? That's your hope? Like, that's scary as hell, because projecting another human's tendencies, play calling, all those different types of things, onto an offensive coordinator, last time we saw him direct an offense, was terrible, Adam. Like, it was horrible. Like, he squandered Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. The Raiders ran at a slow pace. It was god awful. Like, I can't say that all these different things. And, like, look, Arthur Smith was top five in pace last year. I don't think that's going to repeat with Todd Downing at the controls this year. We know that, look, this defense is still not fantastic. I know they've added a lot of parts and pieces, but we can't project them to be good. Their pass rush is still going to be terrible. And even if you're projecting their cornerbacks to be somewhat better, this team could run really, really slow this year. They could be a lot slower, especially considering what they were in previous seasons, and taking play action away, or at least not to the levels that we've seen, top three, top five in the NFL for Ryan Tannehill. So the play volume I'm worried about, the efficiency I'm worried about, a different offensive scheme could be a possibility, at least enough to where it can take some of the top off of this offense. I get the A.J. Brown hype, and he is ridiculously, stupidly, otherworldly talented. I think that he is going to be good enough to where he's going to be a wide receiver one. Is he going to be good enough to be a top five wide receiver? That is where I just don't know, man, because there's a lot of wide receivers that are being drafted after him.
Yeah.
Calvin Ridley, Keenan Allen, Michael Thomas, just to name like a really, really small few that are in offenses where they can all garner similar target shares with better quarterback play or similar or better offensive minds, and I think they can all finish ahead of A.J. Brown. So where he's going, I'm just having a hard time. Like, I believe in the talent, believe in the man, but I'm having a hard time really, like, stomaching where he's going in drafts.
So, I get the concerns about Arthur Smith being gone, but part of me still believes that the Titans went with Downing and State and House, hoping and knowing that they're going to try to run the similar offense. And that could change, but I would be more worried about if they go down in pace, if A.J. Brown was just, you know, getting the same amount of targets. But I legitimately think his targets are going up by like 40 this year, and that can help, that can help with if the pace goes down a little bit as well. Like, Calvin Ridley's interesting because when Julio gets traded, Calvin Ridley might slide up to that top five status as well, because he's going to be in a similar situation where he's going to get all the targets. He's been great already with or without Julio. I posted his game log, so it's like he's ridiculous without Julio last year. But if that's the case, like, I think there's a case you can make for A.J. Brown to either be like a top five receiver, but like you said, there's a lot of good receivers too. So, like, if you wanted to take Michael Thomas over him or Keenan Allen or Calvin Ridley, like, I have no issues with that at all. I just am kind of salivating over the fact that A.J. Brown is going to get a career high in targets, and he's been super efficient despite, what I say, outside the top 30 in targets his first two seasons. Like, that alone to me is just ridiculous. Now, if this team didn't have Derrick Henry in the backfield, that would change things, because you know he's getting the ball 25 times a game. But Is there another player that might get targets?
Dude, I'm all in on it. It's Ferk Daddy season. It's all Anthony Ferkser season, man. I'm all in on it. I
wasn't.
Love him.
Dude, I wasn't, and then I started writing about him, and I am now, so I'm with you.
He is a receiver. That's all he is, dude. And he's been stupid efficient when he's been called upon last year. Like, we're talking about, like, you're talking about a player in Anthony Ferkser who over his career has played 84% of his snaps outside or in the slot. He is a wide receiver we were getting at tight end. And for all the reasons we talked about Mike Gesicki last year, that's the reasons why we should be talking about Anthony Ferkser. And he's only got A.J. Brown to contend with in the
passing
game.
Anthony Ferkser is why I'm not drafting Mike Gesicki this year.
Dude, he was ninth amongst all tight ends with 15 or 20 or more targets. I forget the exact line. In yards per route run, right behind Mark Andrews. That's how good he is as a wide receiver. And if
you know
head
what else
over
he was
to
ninth
in fantasy,
he was also ninth in yards per or in fantasy points per snap among tight ends. So he's just ninth
good.
In everything.
Dude, stupid good. He was second in targets per snap. Like basically, if he's on the field, he's getting targets. And now they got Jeff Swaim, who's going to play inline. Ferkser is your slot wide receiver for the tight ends. I mean, for Tennessee. That's what's going to happen, dude. I think that there's a legit path for him to get 100 targets this year. And if he gets the touchdowns, end up as a top five tight end right now. And you
that
can
is
get
spicy.
Him in the 10th or 12th round. Is it, though? Is it really, though? For a guy that could get 100 targets. And people talk about Kyle Pitts and him getting 100 targets. What they're not talking about is Anthony Ferkser's ability to get 100 targets. If he reaches that mark, Adam, can he be top five? Tell me that.
I don't see it. But I have him as my tight end 11, so I like him. Top five is, I mean, I respect it. I like it. It is spicy. I just don't see how he's better than Hockenson, Andrews, Kittle, Waller, or Kelsey. Like, I think one of those guys has to miss time for that to happen. But at the same time,
I think,
like,
it can happen, dude.
Who cares? I think you don't need him to be top five where he's going to go in drafts. Like,
no.
Like Ferkser is why I'm not drafting. Like, if I wait at tight end, like, this is literally my strategy at tight end. It's May 25th, and I already know what I'm doing at tight end. I'm getting Kelsey, Waller, or Kittle, one of those guys if they're there, and I like it. Or I'm taking Hockenson or Irv, or I'm taking Ferkser. Like, I have a tight end pool of like six players.
Dude,
but
same.
Like, I like Ferkser over both New England tight ends. I like him over any Cleveland tight end. I like him over Gronk. I like him over Evan Ingram, Ertz, any Rams tight end, way over Gesicki. Like, tight ends last year, they combined for the Titans. They combined for 29.4% of the Tennessee targets last year. Mm-hmm. And Jonnu Smith's gone. And Corey Davis is gone. They have 157 targets replacing between those two. Arthur Smith, former tight ends coach, better offensive coordinator than Todd Downing. Todd Downing, though, also a former tight ends coach, worked behind and under Arthur Smith for all these years. Like, I just think their offense is predicated still, regardless of Arthur Smith and his play action tendencies being gone. It's going to be off Derrick Henry, play action shots and plays AJ Brown, and then also Anthony Ferkser on the inside. So yeah, like, do I think he's got top five potential? Not quite, but again, who cares if you're drafting this late? I think he has top 10 potential easily. Like, would I be surprised if he finished better than Irv Smith or Noah Fant or Logan Thomas or Robert Tonyan? Not really at all.
I'm in on it, man. I just think that he can crush. He's already shown us the efficiency. All we need is the volume, and this Tennessee offense is set up to feed him volume this year. So, you laid out my tight end strategy. Right now, it's pay up and get Kelsey or get Waller, or I'm going to punt. Absolutely punt, and I'm going to garner a few of these different guys. Like,
especially
you want to talk about
now
Cole
because Komet. once Julio gets traded, Kyle Pitts is going to skyrocket to where you're probably not going to feel comfortable taking him.
He's already up there, dude.
Yeah, like, this is kind of a tangent, but like, once that happens, like, that's really good for me for TJ Hockenson because I think he's going to go over TJ Hockenson. I'd still rather have Hockenson. Yep.
I'm all about punting this year, and I know every year is a late round tight end year. I get that, and I understand how they failed us, but there's also been some really, really good ones too, like Logan Thomas last year. I think Ferkser is going to be a great tight end.
Do you remember who a late round tight end was just 2 years ago? It was Darren Waller.
Yep.
Like,
absolutely, dude.
Because, like, here's the thing, like, you're not drafting a tight end. Like, if you're drafting a tight end late, there's not going to be a huge points per game or efficiency difference between whoever you draft late and Austin Hooper or, you know, these, like, Tyler Higbee, who's had, like, six good games as a fantasy tight end. Like there's just – there's no point to take, in my opinion, like, Logan Thomas at where he's going because you can just load up on higher upside players at different positions and then just wait and wait and get tight ends with similar ceilings or close floors and just kind of mix and match because the position's so bad.
I think it's – look, I'm paying up for two guys or I'm punting to the end and give me a handful of these tight ends that we're going to discuss through all these division breakdowns here. All right, man, before we get up out of here, got to get your breakout, got to get your bust, man. Who's the player that you're willing to sit here and push your chips in that he is going to smash this year, and who's the guy you're fading?
So my breakout is – it's tough choosing because I wanted to put Chark in here because Chark's kind of broken out but not fully.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Pittman and then Firkser, who, you know, has been around for a little bit, but this could be his, like, true, like, just – finally get a huge role type of breakout season. But if I had to pick one that more so fits the definition, I'll go with Michael Pittman. I just believe in the talent. I know AJ Brown is not a breakout player. Just don't even.
Dude, I'm just leaning into it more. Anthony Firkser is my call, dude. Like,
and I was going to pick him too, but I know you love Firkser. Like, I like Firkser a lot, but you love him.
Love him. He is the late round tight end.
So he's this year's Irv for you.
Look, I'm in on it, man. I'm not going to shut up about Firkser. I'm going to look right now. I've got so much Anthony Firkser. Oh, please stay healthy, sir. And best ball right now. And I'm in on it, dude. I think the ceiling is absolutely there, man. Who's your bust? Who are you staying away from?
I mean, we didn't really talk about him, but I mean, James Robinson's obviously a bust candidate. Everything kind of worked well for him last year with the running backs that were injured and had COVID with Rykel Armstead and Azigbo. Didn't have any backups, and James Robinson had the highest opportunity share in the NFL last year. That's obviously changing with Travis Etienne there, so obviously I have to mention him. But if I had to choose somebody else, I mean, kind of thinking about it, like, who could be a bust? Like, from this, because the Texans don't, like, nobody's really, like, yes, I'm not drafting any of the running backs. I wouldn't consider them busts because I'm not drafting them at their ADP. I don't expect much from them. But, like, as far as another bust, like, this is a tough team, a tough division for bust because I don't think Derrick Henry's going to bust. AJ Brown's definitely not going to bust. Maybe you make the case that Tannehill's not going to be as good if they don't have a lot of other receiving options. I could get that. But if we think AJ Brown's going to have this huge year where he's a top five receiver, then Tannehill should still be good. So I guess I'll say James Robinson. Again, more of a boring pick, but we also didn't really talk about him much.
I mean, I want to stay in the same backfield. I could say Tannehill. I wrote him up. Head over to FTN Fantasy and check out the series Brad and I are doing. Tannehill, the thing about Tannehill is nobody's drafting him early, so he's not going to bust, although I don't think he's going to be good this year. I'm going to stay in the same backfield, dude. I think Travis Etienne is going to be overdrafted the closer we get to season. I'm worried on multiple aspects of, like, usage, James Robinson, Trevor Lawrence siphoning off work at the goal line. I think this team could pass more than we think they're going to. And some, I mean, if the touchdowns go that direction and Etienne, I mean, look, he's got guys to fight for targets, man. We haven't even talked about it. James Robinson could still run some pass routes in this offense. Visca, he's going to have to contend with in the short areas of the field.
Tebow.
I believe Travis. Yes, dude.
I'm joking. He's not making the roster.
No. I was about to say, no. But, dude, honestly, I think Travis Etienne is going to be a top 20 running back the closer we get to the NFL season, drafted by consensus. And like we talked about previously, in the fourth round, I just can't do it, man. I can't pay that price.
Do you remember off the top where DeAndre Swift was coming off the board towards the end of the summer last year? Because I think we could see a similar kind of spike with Etienne.
Fourth
because they're
round.
In similar situations, right?
He was going late third, middle of the fourth, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, and I was completely off DeAndre Swift then, and he was good down the stretch, but I think that was still the right process. So I could see myself being on the same exact thought process with Etienne because it's similar, right? You have It's hard to say established with James Robinson because he's had 1 year, but it was an incredible year. Like, you have a clear running back that can handle the workload in front of you. You're a rookie who was arguably the best running back in the class. That's what DeAndre Swift was. He was my running back one in the class. And you join a team that you don't know what your role is going to be right at the gate. I think Travis Etienne's similar to, like, the Miles Sanders rookie year, the DeAndre Swift rookie year, where it's, like, from weeks, like, 12 to 16 or 17, he's going to be that player that you wish you drafted, potentially. But the weeks prior to that, he's going to be, like, maybe a flex at best. And that's not a player I kind of want to draft in the third round.
Yeah, I just can't do it.
Because you got to get there. You got to get there to that point where he finally takes over the backfield. And if it takes that many weeks and you draft him in the third round, you're passing up on some great players. You're passing up on potentially, I don't know, like, running backs are going to get, like, Chris Carson and players like that.
Or you're sidestepping all these wide receivers that have 30, 130.
That's where all the receivers come off the board, too. Yes. So it's like, yeah.
You're sidestepping all of these great wide receivers that have legit 130, 150 target ceilings for a running back that, like, you're projecting, okay, he's going to be fantastic from week one, which could happen. And also, we could see DeAndre Swift 2.0, and it doesn't happen, dude. So it's just not a price I'm willing to pay. All right, everyone, that is the AFC South. Adam and I are going to be back discussing more of these division previews, getting you ready for fantasy season, for best ball season, for all things football related. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.